This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 231, brought to you by Discount Comic Book Service, Summit City Comic Con, and iFanboy listeners like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 231. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Well, hello.
And back by popular demand, it's Chris Niesman.
That is an outright lie, but hello anyway.
No. I just left that there from when Tom was on it last time.
Now, that's true. That people do demand to have Tom back.
Yeah, Chris Niesman records the Don't Miss podcast for us every Monday, and he also will occasionally write for iFanboy.com, so he's a part of the iFanboy family. So thank you for coming back, Chris.
No problem. It's great to be here, guys. I just saw you this past week, and
yes.
and the guy I'm filling in for, I had dinner and a drink with last night. So as we record this,
oddly enough, Connor met up with Tom today.
I know it's
a strange crossover weekend.
I will trade you Ron back for Tom because I miss Tom.
Okay,
we need Ron because somebody's got to do the paperwork.
That's true.
Absolutely true.
All right. We are fanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics every week. We read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one they read that week. They call that the pick of the week. They write about it on the website. We talk about this podcast. We talk about the other books of the week and other topics of interest. Whew. Before we get to the show, a quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show. There'll be spoiler talks. So if you haven't read your books yet, pause the show and come back. Don't ruin it for yourself. It's not our fault if you do. So don't write the emails.
Don't do that.
Stay tuned. This has been the month of giveaways. There'll be a giveaway at the end of the show, so if you haven't won yet, stay tuned. You might be the winner of this week's big DC prize. But until then, Josh, you had the pick of the week, and boy, did you A, get it up early, and B, surprise the heck out of just about everyone in the fanboy universe.
Did you like that? Psych, I didn't like it. I was just kidding. No. Longtime listeners, readers will know that I'm not the biggest J. Michael Straczynski fan. It's not that it's bad. It's just it's not my thing. Is it?
But you've also given him a fair shake. It's not like you've just you read a lot of Thor, Rising Sun. You've read a lot of
some Brave and the Bolds here and there. I've read
Rising Stars. Rising Sun was a bad Wesley Snipes.
Yes, it was. It was a book first. It was a Michael Crichton book, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
I think I read that.
Sean Connery had a wig in that movie. Yeah.
JMS has some really nice moments of brilliance, and you know, talked about this a lot before. He doesn't always close the best, but you know, he's written some nice stuff.
Yeah, it's not just that. There's sometimes a high and mightiness to some of the writing that I tend to not like, that I notice. I may be putting it on myself, but whatever. It's not like, oh, I hate that guy. He's ruining comics. It's just not my thing. And that has caused some consternation among some of the groups. But, you know, he's got skills. There's no doubt about that. People love that stuff. He was all over the Eisners last year. And in this one, Brave and the Bold number 33 was Cliff Chang's return to comics, which isn't entirely true. He's been working on comics the whole time. It's just that he was working on
Greendale,
the Neil Young project written by Josh Dysart. I'm not exactly sure what it is. I don't know how it is, but
it's an OGN. Yeah. From Vertigo.
Whatever it is, it's going to be awesome.
And he's been doing it for a long, long time. So that's why he sort of disappeared from the
scene.
His
return to mainstream superhero books, yes. Basically.
So I was like, all right. And I you know what? I wasn't even going to pick this up. I wasn't sure. And then it was kind of a light week, and I thought, you know what? Let me just try it. And to be honest, we put a preview up on ifanboy.com, and I didn't think that was that good. And it's true that those pages that were on that have nothing to do with the actual story that's in the book. So I went into this completely blind. I didn't know what it was actually about. I didn't have any idea what the reveal was going to be. And by the way, seriously, if you haven't read it and you're thinking of buying it, but you don't have any idea what is going to happen in it, I think you should stop listening now. And you should skip to the next part, because that is what made this good for me, is that A, I didn't really have very high expectations. I just wanted to look at the pictures. And B, I had no idea what was going to happen. In every way possible, this was a perfect one-issue comic book that really used continuity in a way that is special for people who have been reading comics for a long time and know about the really special stories in comics. And,
well, it's fun because in your review, in your very first paragraph, you said, do not read any further if you haven't read the issue yet, because this is all about a big twist, surprise, and if you have that ruined for you, you won't like it. And you got it up super early. I actually was waiting for the bus on the way home from the comic store, and I checked on my phone, and I saw it was up, and I started to read the review, and I saw what you said, and I immediately closed the browser, and I opened my bag up, and I read the book right at the bus stop, which was something I never do. Mm-hmm. And you were totally right. This was A, fantastic issue, and B, it's totally dependent on you not knowing what's happening, and it's slowly opening up and revealing to you. But you were totally right about that.
Well, you know, talking about, you know, the single issue format of it, this is what Brave and the Bold should be. It should be stories like this. That's how a book like Brave and the Bold can be special, and they nailed it.
Yeah, but the difference is, from a sales standpoint, it's really hard to keep readers like that, I think.
You know, I don't care about that. I don't care about that. I want good stories, and that's what a book like Brave and the Bold should be like.
I think what happens, though, is if you drop the ball 1 month for whatever reason, you try something, and it doesn't work, then the next month you find you have half the readers that you did.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things. But either way, so what we've got here is... And it's funny, because when you want to talk about that surprise and having no expectations with it, there are bits in this book, as you start to go through it, you're like, what the hell are they talking about?
Yes.
And it's really easy, if you are in the wrong mindset, to be like, this is stupid. And it's one of those things where it's like Geoff Johns' work, where he'll put stuff in at the beginning of stories where readers just react really negatively to it. Grant Morrison does that too. And it's like, just hold on. At the end, it's going to make sense. And so I was trying to read it with sort of that in mind. And like, just a little example of that is, it's Barbara Gordon, Zatanna, and Wonder Woman. Very beginning of the story, Zatanna wakes up from a horrible dream, goes and says, "Oh, we have to go do something." She says it to her hat, and then she goes and she gets Wonder Woman, and says, "Hey, you should take a night off. We should go dancing." And then there's a little whispery bit, and they're like, "Well, what's that about?" And they go and they find Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, who is still Batgirl at this point, walking around. So it's obviously before the events that took place in The Killing Joke in 1986. Mm-hmm. Try to stay with me. And so, like, at one point in this, they sort of reference an iPhone, and then there's all the single ladies that they're singing in karaoke, which to me says that, wow, so Batgirl's been sort of not only paralyzed for a little while.
Well, that's the sliding scale of comics continuity.
Yep, sliding scale.
And I don't know what the deal is with Brave and the Bold, if these are in continuity or not, but I decided, I was like, I don't really care. That was how I decided to approach it. I was like, I'm not going to worry about that stuff. And I didn't expect anything out of it. And I really thought, like, to be honest, like the title, like Ladies Night, I was like, I feel like that's been used a bajillion times. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just one of those cliches. And they're like, they're going to go out and dance. And Barbara Gordon is the shy wallflower. And they, you know, they get her to dance and have fun and really cut loose for like the first time ever. And she finally lets go. And they end up in a diner afterwards. And there's this little moment in the middle where Barbara sort of wanders into the bathroom and she sees Zatanna and Wonder Woman hugging. And she's like, well, that's weird. And I was thinking, that is weird. And I was like, I wonder how they're going to explain that. And I just didn't get it. And then you get it. A couple of pages later, when you see, like, Zatanna convinces Barbara to go spend more time with her father. She's like, okay, so I'll go hang out with my dad. And through the course of that scene where she's sitting there with her father, they're cutting back and forth between the two groups of characters. And you see Barbara reach for the door. And it literally wasn't until that page that I was like, holy fuck.
This is
the moment before she gets shot in Killing Joke. And I'm telling you, when I read it, I got chills. When I wrote about it, I got chills. I'm explaining it right now, I'm getting chills. I'm looking at her reach at that doorknob. And I'm like,
because you just don't want her to.
Oh, you don't. And it, like, I'm actually literally emotional about it. And I don't have a long history with this character. I don't really have an affinity for her or anything. But this moment, this story, that Killing Joke is so ingrained as just a seminal moment, and they can never reverse this. By the way,
yeah, like, no, absolutely
you
not.
You want to talk about not bringing back Bucky and not bringing back Jason Todd? Do never, ever, ever reverse this, because this needs to have happened. I think
the whole point of the story is Zatanna had a vision of the future. She saw Barbara get shot, and so she takes Barbara out for one last night of fun that she'll remember for the rest of her life. The last night she went dancing, and they had a good time, and she danced with a guy, and that was the entire point of the night out. People were saying, why didn't they just stop it? And the whole point of that was the discussion in the middle where they said that oracles knew the future but couldn't do anything about it. If they did, it would get worse. So they had to let it happen. And it was the moment where you realize, I think I realized a little bit earlier than Josh, where Zatanna and Wonder Woman are basically upset because they're basically sending Barbara off to get shot, and they literally can't stop it.
I think I realized that actually when she was going off in the cabin, they looked really sad.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what else could it be?
It was the bathroom scene where it was like, are they kissing? And I was like, well, okay, first of all, DC's never going to allow that. I'm like, okay, something's out. And the next panel, Zatanna is coming out of the bathroom, and she's been crying.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that's kind of where I started to figure out that, okay, they know something bad is going to happen to Barbara. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where, you know, but it was still definitely worth reading the rest of it and seeing it unfold. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. From a pacing and a structure standpoint, this was perfect.
Yes.
Like, it worked on every possible level.
He made you feel uncomfortable at the right times. It's like, they're out of character. That's odd. But, and whenever you can intentionally make someone question whether something is right or feel uncomfortable about something, and it actually adds to the story, that's pretty cool.
Well, the question really, like, the thing about whether they should have stopped it or not, those are I wasn't questioning what he did in the story about why they didn't, but it does make you think about it. Sure. You think, well, Jesus, these are superheroes. This is their friend. Why don't they try? Why don't they? And I'm not saying that they should have done that, but it made me think about it. And I wrote that in my review. Like, I like that idea that I was left with questions. I was left with food for thought. And, you know, you have to sort of go, well, geez, if you knew about Hitler, would you have shot him? You know, like stuff like that.
Did you read the Booster Gold arc that kind of dealt with the same thing?
There was the arc where they kept trying to stop it, and it kept not happening because
and Rip basically, he says that, you know, this is a stuck in time thing. This is supposed to happen, and you know, I feel the same way with Ted Kord, Blue Beetle, that for Barbara Gordon and for Ted Kord, I think we're seeing some of the best Batgirl and Blue Beetle stories now after they've either been, you know, killed or changed in an irrevocable way. And, you know, I don't know if Josh, you said that you're not really vested into this character, but I'm kind of the same way. But I feel like I've read some really awesome Batgirl stories in the last few years. The Batman Confidential story arc that came out, the Maguire art, there have been great.
I don't read really, any of that stuff.
Oh, you're missing out. That was,
you know what? Can't read everything.
Oh, I know. Me either. I'm just saying that the character is being explored in ways that she wasn't able to before. And it's
I mean, it's not quite the same now, but I love the fact that when she's Oracle and the sort of weird romance that she has with Dick Grayson, when that shows up, I really like that. And I think that's something that they need to have and explore. And I mean, needs to adjust over time. I think one of the things that really made me happy about this issue is that Straczynski has a tendency to, I compare him to, like, it's like a Michael Bay movie at times, like this giant swelling music when he doesn't really deserve it. And in this one, he was actually able to apply that effect where it did deserve it. And in that case, it worked perfectly. Everything meshed and it was perfect. And then at the same time, you know, the reason I bought the book almost seems like an afterthought, but it was the Cliff Chang art. And, like, if you want to talk about acting and sort of understatement and just sort of
body language, everything,
but those were the stories of this, and the acting and the facial expressions and sort of the watching. There's that first page where the three girls step out of the cab, and there's a whole lot of great things about that page. I mean, it's kind of hokey. Like, the two guys look up like, oh man, look at that, you know, like, ooh. And they stand there, and Wonder Woman is totally tall and statuesque, and they've got clothes on that. Comic book artists are notoriously not that great with fashion.
Yes.
And the clothes on them were all perfect. Like, Zatanna looks modern, sexy, and, like, fashionable. And Diana's got a thing that you could see somebody wearing, but also like it's a throwback to her sort of roots and
kind of the toga thing going on.
And like, and then Barbara is in this dress that is a little out of date, but kind of sexy, and it's too small for her, and she's uncomfortable, and she's kind of hunching, and she feels weird, and she's covering herself up with her arms, and it's just those are those little things that really work well. And to watch her, the you know, when she finally decides to dance and open up, like, there's like a blast of energy that comes off the page there, and positivity. And you know, this, you know, Cliff Chang is not a guy, he's not putting a ton of lines down, he's just doing it really well.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the page where they're in the diner. There's a bunch of food that's been eaten, and it's sort of overhead, and Barbara's leaning back, and they're just hanging out, but there's a silence, there's a pall that's hanging over everything.
He's the perfect guy for this kind of story. He does the nice clean lines, and he has the fashion, and he can make them look pretty without being exploitative, and the acting is, this is a story you need to have acting. You need to have characters who are feeling their emotion on their face. Because you can see them, Zatanna and Wonder Woman, you know, trying to hold back their sadness and then finally letting it go, and it was great, even including the Mad Magazine page.
Yeah. So this is one of those things that I didn't realize it was a Mad Magazine page. I thought that was just a trick, but I get it. I totally wasn't going to crease my pages.
I did it.
This is going to be one of those issues that people talk about forever.
Yes.
It's going to be probably up for Eisner's. I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't win.
Every time we say that, it doesn't happen. But
I know. I know. I'm doing that on purpose. At some point soon, you're going to hear Alan Moore.
You've just killed this book's chances.
You hear Alan Moore talk about how J. Michael Straczynski has no...
He doesn't care. He hates Killing Joke.
It doesn't matter. He's going to say it anyway. He's got mad at Jeff Johns. He's going to get mad at Straczynski. It's like, hey, if they don't have...
Well, the great thing about this comic is if you like it and you want to include it in your timeline, then you can put it there. And if you don't like it, you don't want to include it in your timeline, you don't have to. That's what's great about it.
You know, I mean, bottom line, it was just a really good story.
Yep.
And I think that's the most important thing, is that if you have any sort of working knowledge of the Killing Joke, which I think most people that would read Brave and the Bold, obviously, would have a working knowledge of that, it was a good story.
Yep.
And yeah, I'd say, you know, I'll go back and say that, you know, there's a lot of good Batgirl stories. But, I mean, would you guys agree that Barbara Gordon's probably a stronger character now as Oracle than she ever was as Batgirl?
Absolutely, much better.
There's a wistfulness about, like, what the past was, too, and what might have been that adds a whole bunch of weight.
She fills a role that in the DCU that no one else fills, whereas if she was Batgirl, she'd be one of many.
And, you know, she's got no power. She's no, you know, she's a femme fatale waiting to happen. And now she's got like a whole other thing going on that's so much more interesting.
You got it.
Now, was I the only person that read the Marvel Divas miniseries?
Yes.
Well, this week we had Firestar, the one shot, I guess Firestar number one, if you want to be technical about it, but it was a one shot, which is basically a capper to the Marvel Divas mini, which in the same way that the Flash Secret Files and Origins was a capper to the Flash Rebirth mini, this was a capper to the Marvel Divas mini. And Josh, you actually picked this up.
I don't know why. I think it was because, what did Sean McKeever do that came out last week? It was the Young Avengers, I think.
Yeah.
And I really liked that. I had a good time reading that. So I was like, I'll do this too. I mean, this is a guy who gets pigeonholed for doing, you know, females and sort of teenage characters and the sort of...
Yeah, but there's sometimes whenever, you know, it's right.
Yeah.
And Sean being on a book like this is right.
No, and that's totally, I mean, it's totally fair. Yeah. And it was one of those things, like, I don't really know anything about Firestar other than the cartoon. And I think she showed up and quit sometime during Civil War.
Yes, she dropped out in Civil War.
Right. Yeah. And then I remembered, Connor, you talking about Divas, and somebody had cancer.
Yeah,
and,
she did.
Apparently it was her. And but anyways, I just read this sort of, and I'm like, this was almost pick of the week, actually. But I decided, you know, after I read Fire of the Old, I said no. But it was a really good sort of one-shot issue. And it just explored sort of, is it Angelica?
Angelica, yeah.
I'm not sure if that's just the cartoon or not. And Ms. Lion. Angelica's sort of dealing with...
This lion's over in the
Pet Avengers. It's all coming true. She's dealing with the aftermath of having had cancer. And she was, you know, she's sort of in remission. And she's kind of tired, but she wants to use her superpower some, but she's got to be careful and trying to find her place in life. And it was totally a little bit hokey, but it was also kind of perfect. The art was by Emma Rios.
She's good. She's good.
This was a story that it really helped to have been drawn by a woman. I don't know if that sounds terrible, but like it had, you know, like this wouldn't have been good if it was drawn by David Finch. It wouldn't have worked. The art had a femininity to it that still were, it was good art. But it just like it kind of worked in a way that it all went together because
it almost looked like a Vertigo book from the art.
Yeah. I really liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was well done. Like I said, it was hokey, but it still touched me, you know, sort of in the right places, and it was good. Did you guys read
it? Yeah, it was a really nice story. And if you read Divas and you went through the whole adventure, because the Divas mini was all about her fighting the cancer along with her friends Black Cat and Photon and Hellcat. And now this is her sort of coming out of that. She's in remission, but she's still weak, and she's still trying to figure out her life and what she's going to do. And it was a really nice story.
It was a Spider-Man story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a young adult in early years of college, has superpowers, but her life is completely messed up. And Sean captures that age so well. If you've ever read The Waiting Place or his Mary Jane Loves Spider-Man, Sean McKeever is a 19-year-old girl. I'm convinced because he writes that so well.
And doesn't look it.
No, he doesn't. But he is a pretty man. He is a pretty man. I love this issue. It may have been my favorite. It may be my pick of the week. Just because it's just like every emotional beat is there. It's right. I mean, she's incredibly sympathetic character that you root for, and she's a good person. And yeah, it was great. And I love the art. Yes. Whoever this gal is, I want more. So
yeah, she was really good.
Great character moments. And I mean, there's a ton of emotion in this. The conversations with kind of her high school rival, whose life is kind of falling apart as well, and that was a great moment. And every panel was like these really true emotions of these people who don't really care about each other, but have found a moment in time to kind of connect, and just was absolutely nailed. So I enjoyed it a lot.
If you want to talk about good character stuff in this week's Justice League of America 44, I feel like James Robinson's finally sort of getting the handle on the book, and you can finally get to write the way he wants and the characters he wants. And I'm starting to see a lot more of the stuff that, if you're a James Robinson fan, that you like in this issue. In this issue, it's basically...
Bobo? Is Bobo in it?
Dick Grayson. He's not, but it'd be awesome. Dick Grayson, Batman, and Donna Troy are the nominal leaders of the Justice League, and they're training with Kongorilla and Starman Michael.
That's awesome.
And this issue's all Starman Michael and Kongorilla and them having a really great relationship. And as far as I'm concerned, this book could be all about Kongorilla and Starman Michael, because he really nails those two characters. They're funny together. They have good camaraderie.
You just sold me the book.
Well, let me go one step further and tell you the second half of the book is leading into the crossover with JSA, which Robinson loves.
Yeah, that's true.
So now we're leading into a JSA crossover. In this issue, I guess I dropped JSA, so I don't know what's happening over there, but apparently Alan Scott got hurt really badly, so he's in the
JSA
hospital. And then I guess we're leading into a big JSA-JLA crossover, which if you're a Robinson fan, you know this is bread and butter completely. And I think finally, after a long time, we're having a writer who can finally assert himself on the book and tell his stories, and you can totally see his voice happening in this. So if you like Robinson, this is probably something you're really excited about.
Wow. Yes. Because I won't touch Justice League. I mean, that's like...
It's tough.
It's got the stink of like a Deadpool book on it at this point. I'm like,
it was like 3 years of, come on!
I came back to it only for Robinson, and it took a while to get out of the Blackest Night, you know, hole.
Now, I know that you're... It's Bagley still on it?
Yes.
You're a Bagley fan, but do you think that he fits it well?
No, I don't think he necessarily fits this book particularly well, but it's not terrible. Mm-hmm. I like Bagley. I don't think his style works for this book.
It doesn't sound right to me.
But it's minor. He draws a good Kongorilla.
Well,
that's all that matters.
No, I mean, comic book artist worth their salt should be not able to do that.
Right, a big giant I can't say gorilla it. Man. So, it was a really good issue. If you're again, I say this the last couple of issues, but if you're ever, you know, wavering about Justice League, it's probably a good time to jump on this one, especially because it looks like they're leading into the new story. Mm-hmm. So Justice League 44 was good.
Over in Cosmic Marvel Land, we've been reading Guardians of the Galaxy and Nova for a while. They've gotten to this point where they both come out in the same week, and they both have some banner over the top of them. But as far as I can tell, they have nothing to do with that.
This is War of Something. Or Kings of Earth.
Whatever. I'm sick of that. That's driving me nuts. But
War of Thanos. Yeah. Plus the Inhumans.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, though. Now, I think that over time, I'm really enjoying Guardians more than Nova at this point. However,
we don't talk about Nova much anymore.
Because it sort of goes on. It's enjoyable. It's not remarkable. Like, I didn't have much to say about it.
It's a single character. I mean, you have so many great characters in Guardians to play with.
There was a really fun part in Nova for a while, but it sort of stabilized, and you're trying to see where it goes next right now. In this one, the first, like, 5 or 6 pages were, like, this, I don't even know what it was, some intergalactic past, council, future, I don't know. But there was so much talking, and I was really annoyed. I was like, oh, come on. And then after that, it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
After that,
there was a really laborious exposition point in that whole Guardians. Yeah. It's like, okay, get the exposition out of the way. And then you're right. It turned the page, and I was like, okay, here's the Guardians.
I was literally ready to drop the book entirely. I was like, shut up.
You get it.
It's late. I have places to be. Oh, look, Thanos. And it was basically then you could turn it and it's giant, naked, raging Thanos. The Guardians find each other coincidentally. Who cares why?
You know what? The only thing worse than regular Thanos is this giant, naked, raging Thanos.
Giant, naked, like, feral.
Like giant,
Thanos.
Naked out of BC.
Go away. Weather people. And you know, just like, it's funny because these characters over time have all meshed with each other. And like, I didn't know any of them. And now, like, God damn it. If I don't love Rocket.
You love all those characters now.
I really do. They're fun. And like, they're, you know, like, you would think that the joke of a tree who gets bigger every single issue who only says, I am Groot, would get old, but it doesn't. It gets funny
every time.
Every single time. And
it is the cult 45 of comics.
Yeah. It does. You're right. Damn right. Look at you filling in the cater spot. Liquors. No, I had fun with it. And like, when you see, it was in our best panels of the week, but like the part where they basically each half of the team thought the other half of the team was dead. And there's just been this really fun little thing where Rocket Raccoon and Cosmo, the communist psychic dog, space dog. I know, exactly. Awesome. And they hate each other because it's a dog and a raccoon.
Mm-hmm.
And this time they see each other, and there's this really like grudging, like, it's good to see you. Yeah, I'm glad you're not dead.
I'm glad you're not too dead.
Yeah. You know, it's
mostly
just
dead.
It's just a cute, this is like a fun little thing, and that stuff happens all the time. And the testimonials that they do, sort of the after mission briefings that are sort of put throughout it, are really fun. They shouldn't be because they're just exposition, but they do a good job with like having the characters act a certain way.
It's funny exposition.
Yeah, it is,
you know, and that's and the way it's framed is it actually makes it very interesting. I had never noticed this before, but did you notice where they drink after missions?
Yeah, I guess I did. They are drinking. That was a nice end cap, actually. It was Quill, Star-Lord, and Rocket Raccoon just being like, all right, so no, it's going okay. What do you think? Do you regret it? No, I think it's good. It's fine. Have another drink.
Well, you know? They drink at Star One's Bar.
Oh, do they?
That's the name of the bar, is Star One's Bar, which I thought was very, very cute.
That's nice.
This is a book I'm looking forward to getting in trade. It's been on my wish list for a while.
It's a book that really grows on me. Like I don't think about it. And every time I get to it, I kind of forget that I liked it. And so every time I read it, it's kind of a surprise. Like, oh, that was fun. Like, I don't know. I like that. I like books like that.
Yeah. You know, if you're Buck Rogers, Star Wars, you know, that kind of cosmic story, I mean, Guardians is a book that you'll probably enjoy. It's just fun.
It's like a 70s Marvel book.
Yes.
Slightly updated, and that's like the most fun kind of thing for me. I love that.
Those books tend to be the ones we like the most. We always talk about the 70s style Marvel books, which are
but updated without any of the sort of leftovers.
I actually found like a 1977 Marvel preview, you know, the old black and white magazine that was Star-Lord, and it was done by Claremont and Byrne.
Ooh.
It's crazy good, but it's like mid-1970s Star-Lord.
So I don't think you can talk about Claremont without mentioning the word crazy. It's contractually obligated. Now, Chris, I was really excited for this first wave world from DC, the new pulp planet, I guess, whatever we're going to call it, DC World 42, whatever freaking number it is. And I liked the first issue, the one-shot. I was excited. Last week was the Doc Savage issue. Less said about that, the better. I made a promise I would buy all of the issues, the first ones, just to see how they were. And I'm happy I bought the Spirit because it was much better than I was expecting, especially after reading Doc Savage.
I did not read Doc Savage, and you guys have kind of convinced me that I probably shouldn't rush in and look for it. But the Spirit, number one, I really, really enjoyed it. More than anything, I'm a big fan of Mortat. Mm-hmm. And from his work on Elephant Man. And I think Spirit is a perfect book for him to work on. Just he draws really kind of dark and cruddy looking cityscapes well. And they're in is it Central City?
Yes, that the name Central of the City. Yep.
And Mortat just, he nails the atmosphere of this very bleak cityscape, this very corrupt city, which is where the Spirit, resides. But he has great subtle sense of humor. I noticed it today whenever the Spirit is getting dressed for the night. There's like this table with all of his stuff, and it's got his mask sitting next to a bottle of Spirit gum, which I thought was a very funny little in-panel joke that what does the Spirit put his mask on with? Well, Spirit gum.
Yeah. I haven't read a lot of Mortat, but it had a really nice texture to it, and it was very similar to like Kenneth Rocafort in a way. Mm-hmm. Also,
he has some European influences in there as well.
Not just that, you had a backup tale by Denny O'Neill and Bill Sienkiewicz, which was amazing. I really wasn't going to get this until I saw it was a first wave book. You know, I didn't read a lot of Spirit historically. I loved the Darwin Cook series, and I thought I'd just leave it at that. That'd be my Spirit
that
experience.
That was my call.
But I'm glad I took a shot on this. It was a lot of fun. I especially love the backup tale. This black and white Sienkiewicz art was just gorgeous.
Yeah, anytime you work on the Spirit, there's a certain weight that comes that because you're working with the Spirit. And I don't know if everyone, you know, that listens to the show understands the importance of the Spirit and Will Eisner. I mean, the Eisner Awards, well, they're named after the guy that the Spirit was his book. And that's kind of a big deal. So for an artist, I think especially to try and tackle that is a big challenge. But I think Mortet did a really nice job with it. I mean, and the nuts and bolts of the story, I mean, it's a crime story. And so you're going to get pretty basic crime stuff. And there's a nice little twist in this, but one that you kind of see coming anyway. And it's really just more about atmosphere and the characters and the Spirit, who is kind of this funny, but, action packed, vigilante. So, I mean, it's by its nature, it's just a fun mystery crime book. And it did well. It did what the Spirit's supposed to do.
Yep. All right. Discount Comic Book Service has monthly specials up to 75% off. They got 40% off all the major publishers with flat rate shipping of $5.95 on all U.S. orders. And you can buy anything that's listed in previews. They've got a lot of trade paperbacks in stock. I believe at this point it's over 9,000 trade paperbacks. It's a lot of them. You can track your orders online. You can do it all at dcbservice.com. But that's not all. On May 22nd in Fort Wayne, Indiana, there's a Summit City Comic Con. You can come one, come all. If you are in this Fort Wayne, Indiana area or within driving distance, come on May 22nd. You can find out all of the information on the Summit City Comic Con at www.summitcitycomiccon.com.
Chris, are you going to that?
I am going to that. Yeah, I actually...
Such luminaries as Chris Niesman will be there.
I'm actually putting together either the carpool or the Chicago convoy, which will probably be leaving early Saturday morning to get down there before opening, and yeah, it'll be fun. That's good old Fort Wayne, Indiana. So
we met all the DCBS guys, this past week at the C2E2. They were nice guys.
Yep, Cam and Zach and Ben, and I know that they are not just sponsors; they are avid listeners. Those guys, whenever they pack the orders, they're usually listening to podcasts, and I hear from them, all the time. You know, it's usually correcting me about being wrong, but yeah,
that never happens.
It's probably already happened 3 times tonight.
Hey, Josh.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was exciting this week.
Haircut.
Haircut.
When I first moved to Los Angeles, I used to go to this place, and it was just called like United Haircutters. And I walk in, and the woman of indeterminate origin would say, "Haircut." And I
said,
"Yes," and she said, "What number?" And then it was like 3, because if you said, I said 2 once, 2 was way too short.
Yeah, that's an LA thing. When I got my haircut in LA, when I lived there, it was like you didn't tell them how short you wanted; you just told them a number.
Yeah,
my
wife made me stop going there. She made me go to the place where I paid $50 instead, and it's a much better experience. But the other one was like $8, and I was in and out in 4 minutes.
Yeah, haircut. I want 2, please.
Anyway,
it's easier for me and Connor because there's not much to cut.
Well, let's talk about easier.
My hair is all that I have left. It's it. That is, I mean, everything else is subjective. But at
clinging tightly to the coif.
Oh, gray hairs are starting too.
This is getting depressing. Ultimate Spider-Man number 9. In this issue, Peter Parker finally gets his hair cut, and I realized while I was reading this that. Because this issue focuses also on Spider-Woman, his female clone, that if they had gone on much longer, he would have looked just like the clone.
Yes, that's true. You know what was awesome about this? Not that they gave him a haircut, which was awesome, but the fact also, and I love this, that they said it also makes you look like you have round head.
Yes.
This is the
fourth wall breaking issue where they dealt with the haircut that everybody hated, and they dealt with the fact that Peter Parker had a super round head in his costume the whole time. They said it was because of the hair.
I love that for a couple of reasons. A, the round head thing never bothered me, really.
No, it didn't bother me at one
point. Stylistic thing, but like they critiqued themselves and adjusted.
And then you see after that he's got different style head when
yeah. I thought that was actually really neat. But besides that, I love this new epoch of Ultimate Spider-Man. This Spider-Man is amazing friends. They're all hanging out together.
Yep.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, this is like we talk about things that Bendis can do. Bendis can write these groups of kids talking to each other for pages and pages and pages. I'm fine with it. I don't care if anything happens.
It's good. It's safe to come back is what you guys are saying.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yes.
Absolutely.
This whole run. I was thinking about this earlier when we had the rundown and I already knew we were going to talk about the book. And I'm thinking, it's really hard after 10 years to talk about something new about Ultimate Spider-Man and how great it is without repeating ourselves every month. But the fact of the matter is it has been great the entire 10 years. And There's been a couple of little storylines I didn't love as much as the others, but for the most part,
stubbed his toe a couple times. But yeah, well, for the most part, I'll agree with you.
10 years really. Overall, through the course of 10 years, and the fact that he's rejuvenated himself and the David LaFuente art, which has rejuvenated the entire book, is amazing.
It's one of the longest running books I'm reading at this point, and it still feels like a new book. I still think of this as a new title.
Yes.
Like if you were to say, like, what's something newer? I would be like, Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, that's not the case at all.
Not even close.
But it does feel that way, and I really like that.
That's cool.
And I feel like people don't talk about it. People don't get excited about it. Maybe it's because it's just been so consistent. But still, I mean, even as good as Amazing Spider-Man's been, I would still read this.
This is still the best Spider-Man book.
Yeah. Has been for a decade. That's amazing. G.I. Joe number 17. I had actually dropped off this for a little while. I decided to come back on just sort of out of a lark. I didn't even know where they were in the storyline, and this was a great issue.
G.I. Joe is the forgotten book. I mean, yeah. We talk about G.I. Joe Cobra all the time, and that's a great book, and I really love G.I. Joe Origins. It's a great book as well, and I often not even think about G.I. Joe.
Which is kind of funny if you think about it.
And they're supposed to be the same world and the same timeline, but they don't fit. So I just think of them as different. Yeah. It's just fine, totally fine, and it's enjoyable that we think of them as different timelines. This was a great issue. This might have been the best issue they've had of all.
I think so. And it's great that I just sort of was like, I'll read it again. What you had here was you had two things going on. Destro is in some sort of prison.
He's in a gulag.
Cobra has set up.
Cobra has prisons. He got uppity with Baroness and Cobra Commander, and they sent him to the gulag.
And so, like, he's going to take over the prison, basically. And it's awesome. And he can't move his mouth. I didn't know that. I love that detail.
I can't eat.
No, because in the cartoon, like, you know, he was just covered in metal, but it didn't really mean anything. In this, like, it's just a big hunk of metal. He can't move his mouth, and that's much better. That's so much better of a punishment or whatever it is. Yeah. And then the other half of it is Snake Eyes is holed up with a hard master in a grocery in the city.
Snake Eyes, assistant manager of the greengrocer on 125th Street. That's basically what this issue was. It was a lot of Snake Eyes having to cut pineapple. And he cuts a mean pineapple,
doesn't he?
Missed the vegetables and prepare the coleslaw. It was fantastic.
I almost tweeted today that Snake Eyes makes bad coleslaw.
Yeah, well, he does.
For now, apply your warrior skill to chopping coleslaw.
And the hard master is hilarious. It's like the mean Miyagi. It's just not a
charity.
No. it was like, oh, this is great. That actually really reminded me of the old series more than anything, in a good way.
Yes. No, this was a fantastic issue. This was the best one they've had, I think.
It was good.
And I'm not a huge fan of Atkins. I think, as an artist, I think he's good, but for the book, I haven't been a huge fan, but I'm finally coming around and deciding he's okay for the book.
Yeah. Well, you get used to it.
For me, with Robert's work, it's all about who inks him. You know, I've seen his original pencils, and he's outstanding. It kind of rotates with who's inking him. If he has a really good inker, I like his stuff a lot.
And some of the IDW stuff doesn't get the best colorists.
Yeah.
Not that this is an example of that, but I've seen it where it just looks a little too much like he's just figuring out the computer. You mm-hmm. know?
Heavy flats.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Over in Marvel, Sif, I think it was a one-shot, so Sif number one. Sif, yes, you may remember if you're a Thor reader, is sort of the Asgardian lady love of Thor. On and off, on again, off again. She's a Wonder Woman-esque character, but she's been laid low. Because this whole time that Loki was a female, he was wearing around her, so she's not feeling so good about herself. Beta Ray Bill shows up in a bar.
I am here. I am Beta Ray Bill.
I can't get on my ship, though, so somebody else has to do it. I'm looking for Thor. She says, Thor's not around. I can help you out. She goes in, and she kicks a bunch of butt. It was a very classic kind of story. It was actually written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, who's the wife of Matt Fraction, and I couldn't have told you the difference. I thought it was really well done. It was fun.
Who was the art by?
Ryan Stegman.
Ryan Stegman.
Yeah, right. it was just a nice little one-shot. It felt like sort of classic sort of Thor stories, and I really enjoyed it. It was a good little one-shot.
Yeah.
For those of you who are into that kind of thing.
Be on the lookout for Mr. Stegman. I think he's going to be doing a lot more Marvel work. He's doing some great stuff with the Hercules.
He's the funniest comic creator I know on Twitter. I'm serious. I can't do the Twitter best of the week without mentioning him.
Yeah, he makes me laugh at least once a day and makes me feel uncomfortable at least twice.
Finally, Battlefield's Firefly number 2. Which, for me, this is going a long way towards not redeeming, but the first tanky series we didn't love, but this is going a long way towards fixing that.
It makes you feel like it was worth reading tankies.
Yes.
Is what it does.
I think you had to. I think you wouldn't enjoy this as much if you didn't.
And now I can say to Connor, oop the spoot, and it's fun. Oop the spoot. It's just them driving around in the tank, and you find out in this one that I can't remember his name, but the guy
from up from the north,
the Geordi, the lieutenant, he's got a mad on for German tanks. And so
Wouldn't you, though?
Well, yeah. He's taken his whole crew out to find this super tiger, this giant, scary German tank. And then one of the thing that Garth Ennis does that the other people don't do that makes him so good at these books is that he takes you over to the German side.
Yes.
And he makes sure, and there was this scene in this where a guy comes up and there he's like, listen, we're going to lose. I'm going to assume that most people aren't reading this, and I'm going to tell you why you should read it by telling you what happened. The guy comes up to his Übermeister Führerschaft. I don't know how to say it. It's a very long word for.
That's why the Germans lost. They were too busy talking to each other, and they just there was no time to fight.
The words are very
such long names.
He says, listen, we've lost this war. It's no point in us throwing all our lives away. I'm going to go. And the head of the lieutenant, he says, you're a good man. You've always spoken your word, and you know you've fought great. I understand. I really appreciate you came to talk to me. Good luck. The guy turns around, and the lieutenant shoots him. You can't have this.
Deserter. And this is great with that stuff.
Oh, and like he said, he takes you on both sides, and the sort of, the good and evil of it goes away a little bit. Because on the battlefield, it's not really about that. You're just on your side and whatever. I'm not condoning Nazis. That's not what I'm saying. But it's
emotional.
It really, I get phlegm. I got to choke up a lot, but not over that. It was good though. It was really good, and like you said, it makes Tankies worth it. It was really nice to see that continued in a way that was enjoyable. So
yeah, actually, of all the series he's done, I think if you told me he's going to do Tankies again, I would have been like, ugh. But that's actually the one that I think needed it the most.
Oh, it's not hurt by the Carlos Esquerra art.
No. Oh no.
He's real good.
He's very good.
Perfect for that too.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to the Night Witch's return, which is next, right?
Is it? I'm not even looking forward. I'm just getting my head down with these books right now.
Yeah. Night Witches come back.
So those are the books that we read this week, the ones we thought were interesting enough to talk about. But that's not all about us. It's all about you guys, too. So you can go to fanboy.com. You can make your pull list on Monday. You can rate and review your books on Wednesday. And you can we sometimes pick the best reviews to talk about. And this week,
yes,
we get some reviews to talk about.
Zombie Poo was very favorable of American Vampire number 2. He gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And you all out there in iFanboy land made it, or 2.2% of you made it the pick of the week. And Zombie Poo says the best surprise of this book thus far is Scott Snyder, who created the book and brought Steve along for the ride. I've never heard of him before, but now I will make sure to be on the lookout for what he does next, because goddamn, this book is good. With all the different angles and cliches to deal with in setting up a new vampire saga, Snyder and King have done something that hasn't happened in a while, and that's make a vampire tale that's fresh. In this issue, you learn a little bit more about the rules of being a vampire in this universe and what makes Pearl and Skinner different from the other vampires. Without spoiling anything, I enjoyed the subtle twist on the usual vampire weaknesses and strengths. This is a very well-written book. And I would agree with Zombie Poo, even though I'll say that the art is my favorite part, because Raphael Albuquerque is a freaking animal.
He's great.
He is so good.
Anyone with that name has to be a good artist.
Oh, yeah.
You can't be like, oh, these pages are by Raphael Albuquerque, and he's terrible.
I thought about the first issue the same way the second one, in that this is like the best bang for your buck book out there. Mm-hmm. It's so dense. It's an issue broken up into two stories. Scott Snyder writes the first one, Stephen King writes the second one, and Raphael Albuquerque draws them both. And almost a little bit of a different style for each story. It's almost like
the production's different on each of them.
Yeah, and it's almost like each story is worth the one issue tale. I mean, it's almost like you're getting two issues per book. It feels very dense. It feels like you're getting a good read out of it. So if anybody, for those out there who really care about price point and how much they're getting out of their dollar, American Vampires is just chock full of great story.
Listen, I haven't read this yet. For whatever reason, I skipped it on my stack. But I'm flipping through it, and I get to a page here, and I see a man in one of those old-timey deep-sea diving suits.
Yes.
I want to know more.
That was almost a panel of the week, just because it's a beautiful panel with the light coming in from the top.
It hits my my sweet spot, because it's American history mixed with vampires. You're dealing with turn of the century. 1909 is the backup story. I don't even want to call it a backup story. It's the second.
No, there's just
story.
Two stories, and they're both equal. Yeah.
And the other story is 1925. 1925, Los Angeles.
A lot of balls to put the Stephen King story second.
Yeah, but they're both so different. And it, honestly, it's my second favorite story. Yeah. I really like the 1920s story. Is great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great book. I'm glad I jumped on it. I don't normally jump on Vertigo books in the beginning unless they're scalped, but that's the way it goes. Jabroni Unk.
I thought of it like Jabroni Uncle.
Jabroni Uncle.
I don't know.
Jabroni's your uncle. He wrote about Captain America who won't wield the shield. Oh, really? Good story, 2 out of 5, and the art, 3 out of 5. And 0.21% of you made it your pick of the week. And Jabroni's your uncle says, this was a real disappointment.
What were your expectations going in?
Well, I say the whole thing was the wraparound story starring Marvel's very own best writers was quite funny. Unfortunately, the middle was a mess, and my head hurt trying to follow the psychedelic story about the fake Captain America and something about the thing with the book and the pendant. When I heard Matt Fraction talking about this book, I was very excited for the story. Unfortunately, the funniest part of the book was the fake siege checklist in the back. That made me laugh out loud. So skip the book and read the back page. And I didn't read this.
Neither of you guys read this?
No, I saw Jason Aaron was one of the writers.
That's why I read it. And what he says here is exactly right. The beginning part is actually really funny. It's Forbush Man, and he has been resurrected like a killer, like brought back in the sort of grim and gritty style. And he comes to a comic bookshop to find out who's ruined Marvel Comics. And sitting at a table is Ed Brubaker and Jason Aaron. And Ed Brubaker is like, keeps telling everybody about his Eisners. It's really very funny. And he keeps telling Jason Aaron to go get him coffee, and he doesn't know who he is. And I mean, it's totally cheesy, but it made me laugh. And then somebody who's supposed to be Matt Fraction but doesn't look like Matt Fraction comes out and goes, no, but this is a good story. And then there's like it's Captain Strange, whatever. It's like a mixture of Captain America and Doctor Strange, and it's pretty looking, whatever, but it's awful. Like it's not. I couldn't tell you if it was funny because it was one of those things. Like, not that I want to be the guy who complains about stuff, but there's Matt Fraction stuff from the past that I have really not liked because he's trying really hard to be weird and sort of odd and clever, and it wasn't. And so, like, I read like a page of it. I was like, I hate this. So I just skipped through to the end with like the bits, the sort of other bits that closed it that were the same as the front. That part was funny. Not worth it. No.
But I don't know why
I read it.
Well, Jason Aaron.
He was funny. People don't understand. He's actually really funny.
He's a very funny guy.
Jason has an amazing dry humor that you will miss it and then walk away and go, oh, damn, that was really funny.
If you want to write reviews of your books and pick them and pull them and do all that stuff, make sure you go to ifanboy.com. You got to sign up for an account, for God's sakes. And then you can pick your comics every single day, come out every Monday afternoon. East Coast time, I guess. You may vary. Pick your books, and then for all the books that you pick, you can choose to rate them and write a review about them. One of my favorite parts of the week, by the way, is going through and picking the number of stars I want to do with each one and seeing what that does to the average. The average is really – it's really fun to watch the averages kind of be right.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And wow, you don't get out much, man.
Well, it's my web. I don't.
This is our job, man. What do you want from us?
I haven't been out for 2 months.
Josh is sitting there covered in feces right now.
I went out and saw Kick-Ass, and it doesn't really matter what the movie is. I was going to love it. You know what I mean? Like, how was it? It was awesome.
It was my apartment.
No one cried in it once. Anyway, so go there. You can write a review on all that stuff and take part of it, and we always pick
write a good review. You'll show up on the show. That's what you got to do.
That's what we're saying. Also, if you like iFanboy, the whole site's free. It's going to be free. Podcasts, videos, a metric buttload of content coming out every single day. We've expanded a lot. I hope you are enjoying it. I'm certainly enjoying it. I feel the bar has been raised quite a bit, and I feel like I can't write anymore.
I like having to write less.
I don't feel like I'm writing less. So get over there. But if you want to help keep that stuff going, there's a few things that you can do. You can click on the banners and make sure you visit the sponsors. We talked about Discount Comic Book Service and the stuff on there. But those are the people who, you know, contributing to iFanboy. So if you can support them, that'd be awesome. You go to ifanboy.com/Amazon and click on the little Powered by Amazon button there. And then what happens? A little cookie is placed in your computer for a small amount of time. And anything you buy at Amazon gets counted on our account. You don't have to do anything. It costs you nothing, and it's a really good way to help. Or you could buy t-shirts. We're done with Battle Pug shirts. They're done.
I don't know for sure.
Well, it's only like
somewhere in my apartment there may be a
giant woman or a tiny, tiny man. Those are the only ones.
I gotta have something to go jogging in.
I hear you. Connor wears all the shirts, by the way. It's important.
Pre-worn. They're all pre-worn.
It's true.
We do have the Fear Agent shirt. The Fear Agent is the only Fear Agent shirt that has been okayed by Rick Remender. It's drawn by Jerome Opeña. I tried mine on the other day, actually, for the first time, and I was like, oh, it fits pleasantly. I enjoyed it.
I need to get mine. Yeah. I need to get that ordered up.
It's a good shirt. I like it. Yeah. Big old Jerome Opeña art on it.
Chris, I'm going to do deep knee bends in your shirt just for you.
Nice. It can make it extra sweaty for me.
Sleep in it. Sleep in it.
Ooh, that's a good idea, too. Yeah.
Or you could be an iFanboy member. An iFanboy member is a person who really likes this and wants this to all stick around and support it. And by doing that, you can send us $4 a month, which is the cost of one crappy comic book. That's where that came from. Or $42 a year, which is basically the same thing, but a little bit discounted. Or if you really wanted to, you could do $10 a month or $100 a year. And by doing that, you're just saying, listen, this stuff is really important to me. I can't get on with my Monday morning without my iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, my Wednesdays without the video show, the pull list, all
don't
the
miss.
Stuff.
Don't miss.
And the Don't Miss podcast on Monday morning that Chris does what, a photo of.
What show is that?
Don't miss.
Fraggle Rock this week.
So, all right. That's later in the show. Yes. Calm down.
We'll get to it. But that's just one way that, you know, you can just take a little bit. That's a cup of coffee, you know, something like that. That you can help support the show directly, and the members, we appreciate you so much. We send everybody who gets a membership a prize pack, some buttons and stickers, a comic book. That comic book is,
you know, and again, the worse the comic, that's the more affection we have for you.
Yeah. So if you get like, this is a piece of shit. On the other hand, if you get like Miracle Man number 2, I'd watch your ass. That's all. the higher level, the $10 a month, $100 a month, they get a T-shirt, and you can sport that T-shirt at comic conventions or.
We saw a bunch in Chicago, actually.
Yeah, that's awesome, and it's always cool to see like a member shirt. You're like, wow.
Yeah,
that's
that was the member shirts we saw in Chicago. Yeah,
that's really cool. So that's how you can do it. Thank you very much for all of your support. You keep it all going, and we really appreciate it.
We're running along, so let's dive into the email. The first email, or the only email for the show, is from Abu George, and Abu George says, "Hey guys, love the show. You all do a fantastic job. Keep it up. Thanks." My question is about tie-ins. I would like to get your guys' view on what you think of them. Number one, are they worth doing? Number two, what's so addictive about them? I tend to be sucked into buying them sometimes. Three, when have they been done right and when have they been done wrong? Four, what does it take to make a tie-in really worth it? Five, examples of what you guys feel are some good ones and some bad ones and why. People are really hung up on tie-ins. Mm-hmm. They feel like they have to buy them, and if they get mad when they don't mean anything. And tie-ins are never going to mean anything because the main thing happens in the story.
Yep.
So
tie-ins are a nice diversion. Hopefully it tells you... You can't tell everyone's story in the main book, so hopefully a tie-in will tell you what's happening with your favorite character in the side book. Yep. But that's all they are doing.
It's really up to whether it's good or not. Yeah. And that's can be anything. I mean, I can tell you right now, people are like, well, the Blackest Night tie-ins were good, but the ones for Final Crisis weren't. And then the Secret Invasion ones weren't. But and then none of that really actually counts, I don't think, because I can tell you a good tie-in from all of those things. Yep. Because it had to do with the story. When you want to talk about Secret Invasion, what was the best tie-in? It was Jason Aaron's Black Panther.
Yeah.
When you want to talk about, you know, Blackest Night, what was the best tie-in? Probably.
I really like Secret Six and
Superman and Batman were good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in Final Crisis, it was the John Jones one. I mean, basically, you should all be reading tie-ins if they're a character that you like and you want to read more about
them.
Or
the creator.
You know. Yeah, or a creator that you like. Otherwise, if you're buying a tie-in expecting something big to happen or some big revelation, it's not going to happen in a tie-in.
Because they can't.
Yeah.
But you can get some fantastic stories. Secret Wars 2 tie-in, the Johnny Storm one with the...
No. There's nothing good about Secret Wars 2.
What? No. That story, that one tie-in is a classic Fantastic Four issue. It was the one good thing from Secret Wars 2.
No. Chris just took himself off the show for forever.
Oh, God.
You're never coming back on the show.
I can't believe that just got brought up.
Secret Wars 2, goddamn you, Beyonder.
The only person in the world who went, no shit, is Jimsky. He just went, yeah.
Thank you.
By the way, if you don't know who Jimsky is, then you need to come to the website more often.
Yeah. But that's what it comes down to. Tie-ins can be good. They can be bad. It all depends on who's doing them. And really, are they worth doing? Sure. There's always worth stories to be told, and they want you to buy them. That's why they do them.
I do think, though, that if you feel like you have to buy them for an event and you don't want to, then don't buy them.
Yes.
Just don't. If you've never read Booster Gold and you don't know who the person is doing it and there's a Booster Gold tie-in, don't get it. You don't need to. However, if after the fact you heard, hey, that was really good, maybe go try something new. You might, you know, whatever.
That was, again, the Black Panther one. I don't normally buy Black Panther, but I bought it because it's Jason Aaron and it was fantastic. So you never know what you're going to find. But at the same time, I never, ever feel like I have to. I always pick and choose. We discuss this a lot, especially with, I think you guys just talked about it last time when I was on the show about like the Brightest Day tie-ins versus the X-Men tie-ins. And if you're already buying the books anyway, so that's fine. But you don't need to necessarily buy any extra books unless you really want to.
Unless it's a character that you're interested in.
There is a negative version of it, I think, when you're reading a book and something else, and you're only
bumps
reading that
it.
Book, and something else bumps into it and ruins it.
Well, that was X-Factor this week. I dropped it again because it tied back into what's happening. I didn't want to go through that again, so I dropped X-Factor.
Quit reminding me this is an X-Men book.
Exactly. So,
damn it.
The point is, if it's a character you like, if it's a creator you like, if you think you want to read the story, buy it. If you think you're going to have to read it because it's important, don't worry about it. That's the point, I think.
If you have a question or a comment or anything like that, you can write into contact@ifanboy.com. Honestly, please don't. I'm backlogged. No, I'm kidding.
Give me a break.
No, I spent like hours the other day writing back to people. It's just like
we get to everything eventually. Just sometimes it takes a while because we get a lot of email.
If you write in and you haven't heard back for a month or two, it isn't that we don't like you.
Actually, I wanted to address something really quickly just about email. Because people contact us through all different avenues, and I want to tell you the best way to contact us is the contact@ifanboy.com email. We all get that email. That is the best way. After that, you can email us directly, and that's fine too, but really the best way is contact. The worst way, and I've seen this crop up a couple times recently, the way you'll never get a response is to DM us through our iFanboy account. That is never going to see the light of day. It's just don't worry about it.
That is a big, dark well of nothing.
You mean the Twitter iFanboy account.
Yes. The Twitter iFanboy account. Do not DM us through our Twitter iFanboy account. We will never see that because we get so much junk through there. So contact@ifanboy.com is the way to go.
I'm going to take it one further. Don't ask some really complicated ass question over Twitter.
Because it's 140
characters. I have a sentence and a half. What do you think of the ramification? No.
Okay. All right, so this week no voicemails because we're running long. I think we're wrong already, so let's get right to the giveaway. This month has been giveaway month at iFanboy. We've been giving away a big prize pack the last 3 weeks. Everything must go. It is a sale. It is a summer sale. So
this is where I get a gift for being a guest on iFanboy.
Yeah, maybe. Last week was the big Top Cow prize. Before that, we had a other kind of prize. Oh, we had the Jonathan Ross prize. This week is the big DC Comics prize, which includes 10 graphic novels, including Batman Cacophony, Gears of War Volume 1, Planetary Volume 4, Greek Street Volume 1, Supergirl Who's Superwoman, Starman's Volume 1 and 2, Ex Machina's Volume 6 and 7, and The Winter Men. So you're getting DC proper, you're getting Wildstorm, you're getting Vertigo, you're getting all kinds of stuff there.
That's cool.
All across the spectrum of DC. And the winner of the DC prize pack is not Chris Niesman. It is Desiree Briner or Brinner. I apologize. Either way, Desiree Briner, Brinner, you are the winner of the DC Comics prize pack. So congratulations. That will be going to you shortly. And next week is the big one. It is my personal DVD collection that I don't need anymore.
There's just a stink of desperation about that one.
I have one man's trash. These are my DVDs I don't need anymore. So if you go on ifanboy.com in the red post, you can see that there's a ton of them. They're all basically the DC animated DVDs plus Hellboys.
Plus
a couple of Marvel ones, plus some audio dramas from Graphic Audio. You can check that out at ifanboy.com. That'll be next week's giveaway, finally.
Nice.
And
Connor is thorough.
Yeah.
When he starts a collection, he finishes it.
So that's the giveaway. Congratulations, Desiree.
Desiree won because she was an iFanboy member.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes. Sorry.
That's key. We're giving away stuff as often as we can to iFanboy members. After you do that, you don't have to do sweet FA. That's what I'm saying. You don't have to do nothing. You just be like, oh, look at this. I won. So that's how that happens. So thank you to the members. This is how we thank you back. We got more stuff to give away. This isn't stopping anytime soon.
Oh, God, no. I'm looking at the stack on my desk. It doesn't seem to get any smaller no matter what we give away. So that's how that happens. iFanboy.com every week, every day. Make it a part of your life. You can read Josh's Pick of the Week review there. You can read Ron's Book of the Month review, which we'll probably talk about next week when Ron comes back. You can find all of our new writers. We got Tom Caters. We got Molly McIsaac. We got David Brothers. We got Jason Wood. We got Ben Simpson. We got Josh Richardson. We got all kinds, plus Jim Marchkowski and Paul Montgomery and Mike Romo. Everybody's there writing great stuff every day. Check that out. We're averaging like 8 to 9 to 10 new posts a day, so you got to check that out all day long to find out what we're writing about. And we have a video show that comes out every Wednesday. This past week, where we talked about The Losers. We talked about the movie. We talked about the book. We talked about Jock a lot. And that was fun. Next week is part one of two of our epic Chicago show, the C2E2 convention. With so much going on, we shot 2 episodes worth of content. So that'll be rolling out starting next week.
Again, we've made this joke, but you're being presumptuous.
So that'll happen next week. Check that out. If you saw us in Chicago, you saw us running around with our camera or at our booth with our camera. So
I don't know if any of you guys have tried to edit a show with an infant in the house, but it is difficult. So
what are you going to do?
Don't expect much, people.
Oh, there's not even any transitions in this show. So check that out. iFanboy.com.
It's black.
You can also find all of our social networks there, our Twitters, our Facebooks, if you really want. Our MySpaces are on there. So
I started watching you all on my Roku player.
Ah, Roku player, TiVos. Yeah. Find us through all those things. Check it out. We met a lot of cool people at C2E2, so thank you if you stopped by and said hello, especially to the Loyola.
That's crazy.
Comic book club from Loyola University that every Wednesday gets together and watches our show. They came by the booth and said hi, so thank you.
Salt of the earth people in Chicago.
Very nice. If there'd only been more of them.
Is that the real America?
That's the real America.
I'm not. Yeah. Not
you know, I don't know why all these people are iFanboy fans. I mean, we tried to condition them for like 4 years to only root for Around Comics.
Hey, we had people come by looking for you.
Yeah.
I meant to tell you, Chris, I really like the new Around Comics format.
Silence.
I mean, like, the other ones are okay, but this one's really working for me.
See, you're just mad because we got one last Josh dig on the last episode, which was one of my favorite moments of that.
I think that was pretty bad.
That was awesome.
I'm wondering if I wrote it like ironically, but who knows? Back then, we didn't think anyone was reading. Like, we pay attention now. I wouldn't have let that get away.
If you were a bad writer now, there's no way that we would do that. Uh-huh. But that actually flowed from your pen or into your keyboard. I write
everything out longhand first. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you go back and listen to the last episode of Around Comics. I hear that Sal retired again.
Again, finally. Yeah. Wow, but we're formulating a return plan.
That's wonderful. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We talked about it earlier. Or you can leave us a voicemail. We didn't have time for that this week at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Any kind of questions, comments, whatever. If you want to get your voicemail read on the show, make sure you keep it kind of short. Don't ramble on forever, for God's sakes. Let us know who you are and where you're from, because that makes it interesting for us. And, you know, try not to call on a shoddy connection on the highway. Although sometimes that's funny, I'll be honest with you. If you like the show and the stuff and everything like that, go to iTunes, leave a review for this show, leave a review for the Don't Miss podcast, leave a review for the video shows, any of that stuff. That's how people get to know about it. But even more than that, if you know somebody who will like it and they don't know about it, make sure you tell them about it. Or send it to them. Send them a link. Do all those things. We really appreciate that. Talk about it in the comic shop if you need to. And that's how it gets done. And we appreciate everyone who's ever done that. It's awesome.
Yes. That's the show. There's your show.
There's your show.
Thank you, Chris.
It was great. It was nice. I've had an iFanboy week.
Chris, 11 o'clock comics. Tell people about that.
Yeah, 11 o'clock comics comes out usually every Thursday, and it is a much longer format than this. It's usually 2 hours, and it's a lot of talking over each other and waxing poetic about our favorite comics. And
listeners don't have jobs.
No, they have long commutes, or they
don't have to pay attention like Homer Simpson.
Exactly. A lot of assembly line workers, I believe. But it's a great group of guys.
They're
Jason
probably
Wood.
The same people. The audience. Like, I mean, who am I kidding?
They are the same people.
I just insulted my own audience.
No, it's a great group of guys, Vince and David and Jason and I, and we, just like you and Ron, we get together once a week and really enjoy each other's company over Skype and talking about comics.
Well, let's not be presumptuous about enjoy this.
I've heard about your police-like feuds and that kind of stuff, so it's I'm waiting for the spinoff shows. You know, in your own little side projects.
You may not know this from our repartee. I actually haven't spoken to Connor socially in 3.5 years.
I like to position my microphone so I don't have to see Josh.
We had a disagreement in episode 15.
Yeah, it's been rough ever since.
This is edited together later. Yeah. We're actually not recording this at the same time.
It's a lot more work, I'll give you that.
Yeah, but it's worth it.
I hate him. So much.
All right. Thanks, Chris, for coming on. That's it for this week's show. We'll talk to you next week. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
I'm Tom. Wait. Oh, wrong script. I'm
that's
Chris.
That's the typo. It went all the way till the end for the typo this week. Yes.
Good work.